Hi, I'm Susie Starlight.
And I'm Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Than you've ever been, you humbug me. You humbug me. I believe those stories, but now you humbug me. You told me to lie that you love me, but seeing you go through. If it don't rain, you humbug me. You humbug me. I believe your story, but now you humbug me.
You're Humbugging Me by the fabulous Thunderbirds. That's from their fourth studio album, T-Bird Rhythm, 1982, boy.
Yeah, great. Jimmy Vaughan on guitar, of course. Marvellous. Marvellous player.
That's Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother, isn't it?
Sure is. But totally different. Because, I mean, the thing is with Jimmy is that he always played really... What's the word? It's a lot cleaner, it's a lot simpler... a lot more basic. He didn't have that style of Stevie Ray Vaughan, but he's got his very own, you know, his very own style, and it's beautiful. Fits in perfectly with this sort of Texas thing going on, you know?
Yeah, to me that band sound blues. They feel like they are blues. They represent blues to me when I hear them. And the other thing is that when you look at the chronology of who's been in and out of the band, it's worse than... a promiscuous person. It's like the Bryce Nighty going up and down. It's like, and then this person was in the band for this long, da, da, da. And then Doyle Bramall the second was in the band from, I think it was 1988 to 1989. And so in a way, it's a bit like going back in time to when John Mayall used to get loads of different, like Eric Clapton and Peter Green, and get different people in the Blues Breakers, isn't it? It's that collective kind of band thing that they've got going down.
I think this lineup, though, is the definitive one, and it sort of really works for me. You know, this particular album really, I think, to me, is the best one.
Yeah.
The Monkey, and there's a few tracks on there that are really, really fabulous. And again, you know, you hear this on our record turntable virtually every couple of weeks, don't you?
Do you know, yes, we do. And when I first saw the video of the Fabulous Thunderbirds with Kim Wilson, he's the only guy that's been in the band from the very beginning, hasn't he? He's the lead singer. And he's quite a match. He's got quite wide shoulders, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, and it's odd to sort of see him singing blues like that, because he looks quite like he'd punch you one, you know?
Yeah, well, a lot of his lyrics are very macho, and, you know, it's all about, you know, going out and raising some stand while I'm still a young man, and all this sort of carry on, you know? It's all very macho, but it's good. I want to see him some years ago, actually, believe it or not, in Southport.
No way.
Yeah, with Miles Singer, Tim Wright, and from the band Little Brother and Whitefire and all that early stuff. And he was great, you know. The band, unfortunately, I don't think lived up to him. He was obviously the star, and it was a bit too much Kim Wilson-ish, really, rather than a full band. And this really is all about the whole band, you know.
Indeed. We're talking about a band that's a band. These two guys completely created beautiful magic.
They certainly did.
That you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, stowing away? Time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend in the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the out of time.
made to Hollywood is etched upon my mind. After all the things we've done and seen, you find another man. The things you think are useless, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
Reeling in the Years, Steely Dan.
Yeah, that's taken from their album Can't Buy a Thrill in 1972.
Remarkable. Of course, Elliot Randall on guitar there.
Yeah.
I've always loved, you know, I've always really loved that solo. And
apparently that was Jimmy Page's favourite solo of all time, that Elliot Randall.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've done my research.
Blimey. Well, you know, I mean, what I love about it is that the difference in tones on it. It's a great song. It's got that, you know, you can hear those jazzy elements of Steely Dan, and it's that, you know, Donald Fagen thing coming in. Because one of our favourite albums, of course, that we do listen to a lot again is The Nightfly.
Of course, yeah.
You know, by Fagen. And, of course, that's Larry Carlton's all over that, like a, you know,
a rash.
Bear poo in the woods. I've got to watch my language on this show.
Indeed.
But, you know, Elliot Randall on there, great, great songwriting, great vocal, great performance, great song, you know?
It's interesting, though, because in Rolling Stone magazine, Fagen actually described this song as dumb but effective.
No, is that what he said?
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, when you read these things. And I know, and I with the show as well, I sometimes struggle with this in my mind because I want to enjoy the music. I love the stories associated, but sometimes you can get a bit over-analytical, and I quite like doing that. But I want it to be about the enjoyment of the actual song, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and just the way the bass is going, listening to the bass in that as well, and just the way it's going, and just the syncopation and the way it was changing with it, and then really getting really high up the neck towards the end. I'm learning all the time. It's quite wonderful, actually.
Well, the production on the Steely Dan stuff's always been great for me. I mean, I've listened to it a lot, and of course, as they developed into the career, you know, it became more and more detailed and much more, you know, really critical.
Yeah.
But that sort of definition of production, it's quite beautiful for me. And you know, and like The Nightfly, going back to that, it is very of its time, you know, but, you know, everything on that record is in its own little pocket. The bass and the kick drum and the snare drum and the hi-hats and the guitars and keyboards, they're all in their own little place in the mix, and they're all beautifully positioned across the stereo picture, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just a magnificent, it's a masterpiece, but it's like a masterpiece, like almost like a photograph. It's so detailed, it's like a photograph as opposed to an expressionist art, if you know what I mean.
It's like opening the cupboard and seeing all the tins facing the front.
Yeah. And clean shelves.
And
yeah.
Open the wardrobe and all the T-shirts are folded beautifully. Colour coordination through the shades.
Yeah, well, anyway, we should dedicate that to Walter Becker, who, of course, passed away recently. And, you know, but great album, great band.
Indeed.
Thank you. soldiers and Nixon's bombing. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio.
War dead in
Ohio. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio. War dead in Ohio.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And Ohio, a protest song written about the Kent State University shootings in 1970.
Mm.
It was anti-war, anti-Vietnam War protesters.
Yeah, I mean, National Guard that shot those students.
There were four people died.
Unbelievable.
And I think it was something to do with the fact that Nixon was elected on the basis of a big part of his re-election was about ending the war. Mm. And I think it was there was a decision to bring in the National Guard at that point. And it's just reading about it, you know, there's lots of different versions and lots of inaccuracies and people aren't quite sure. And it's but the fact is that this happened in 1970.
Yep.
In an American place of learning.
Yep. And what's new, you know? There it was, you know, the National Guard, the military essentially, and now it's shooters, weapons, but it's still guns. And it's a shocking thing. I think Neil Young was very, very eloquent in his lyric there. He really articulated the feeling of the nation at that time, didn't he?
Yeah. Crosby was saying that when he kept in Richard Nixon's name, that it was one of the bravest things he'd ever heard, because I think it was quite... You never... These days, it's quite normal, isn't it, to document life like that, but in a song. And yet... to actually cite someone back then was quite radical.
Yeah, and Nixon was a, you know, he was a very troublesome character. And you know, he had a full team behind him. And, like, you know, we watched the other night the Post, which is a great film about the Washington Post, wasn't it?
Yeah,
about...
The Watergate.
Yeah, well, just before Watergate. Right, yeah. And it was an amazing... I'd urge everybody to watch it. It's a great film.
Yeah,
and Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks, you know. But it was, it really showed Nixon up in his true colours, really, there.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
I was thinking about Neil Young as well. He doesn't have any, he doesn't hold back when it comes to getting the ankles of presidents. We've got Let's Impeach the President for Lying.
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
I remember seeing that, and we did that documentary when everyone's coming out of the stadium, these guys were coming out of the stadium going, that's not fair, rah, rah, rah. Yeah. It was like...
Well, he doesn't mess about Neil Young, and when he's playing guitar, I mean, he always does it like he means it.
Yeah.
We've been to see him, you know, I've been to see him with our youngest lad, Joe, and we saw him in Biarritz, the two of us, and it was, you know, an incredible performance because he just rocks out with his band, you know? And sometimes he can be really sensitive, playing acoustic guitar and piano, and he's so gentle. And then all of a sudden he'll get his you know, his electric out through his little tweed deluxe and make a tremendous racket with such power and ferocity and commitment to every note, you know?
I think there's something about him that changes it for me, because he doesn't use the music as an ego thing or as a look at me or look what I can do or an acrobatic kind of... attention-seeking thing. He's actually using the medium to convey a message.
Yeah.
And I think that's very evident. And that he reminds me, you know, it's good to just to feel that, so you're not actually there for him. He's the messenger.
Yeah. And, of course, we, you know, we're not even mentioning, you know, the rest of them. Mighty, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash. Great songwriters, great harmony vocals, great instrumentalists, you know. And together they were mighty indeed.
Change.
Denim. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah. What's all that about?
I just know it's from their seventh studio album called Stiff.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I love White Denim.
Who are White Denim?
Well, it's all about the 70s, and I think it's probably, you know, my love of that, you know, 1965, 1975 rock, you know, very clean, punchy guitar. It sounds like it could have been made them. They're really into jamming in the studio as well, and they've done some great YouTube stuff where they've done it live, and it's really, really cool, you know?
Well, that album was released in 2016, and they say that their influence was cited as Curtis Mayfield.
What?
For that particular track.
Yeah. I can kind of hear the groove.
I think it sounds a bit like CeeLo Green. It just has that kind of feel for me, that kind of dancey thing. But they're a bit of an enigma. I don't know who they are. And it's odd.
They're
in my head,
hairy.
I don't know who they are.
Yeah. They're all that hairy. I mean, it's got that hairy look about them. I mean, I think they all wear denim, surprisingly enough. I don't know if it's white or not, but it's certainly denim and big bell-bottom trousers.
I just actually looked online because I wanted to know what they look like because I have no idea. You know these bands that sort of sound older, but they're new?
Yeah.
There's like a load of bands that I just don't know where to fit them into my life right now because I can understand the 1970s and 60s and they fit there, but it's almost like I'm not sure what to do with them.
Mm.
Do you understand that? It's
well,
odd.
I kind of get it, yeah. But I put them very firmly in that period, and I can stick that record on and listen to it, and it doesn't sort of interfere with my sensibility. I sort of groove along to it, and, you know, it's very accurate. And I love the playing, you know. The playing's really nice, and it's tight, and the songs are really good. Now, as a band, I really love them, you know.
Well, you're going to laugh at this as well, right? In Wikipedia, this is what it says about them. Their music is influenced by dub, psychedelic rock, blues, punk rock, progressive rock, soul, jazz, experimental rock, with home-based recording, jamming approach, intense looping work, and unusual song structures.
Well, they are. Well, I think they've got it. But, they seem to have a bit of everything. But to me, you know, their heart and their balls, if you like, is right back in that early 70s thing, you know.
It's funny you should say balls because I've just watched the video and there's a guy riding a bull. Sorry. It's just, but it was one of those bucking bronco things.
Right, well, I think we better leave it there after the bucking bronco.
What's next?
Thank you.
You're listening to Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band, and this is the Supertone Show.
It sure is.
And that was Chet Atkins and Mr. Sandman.
Yeah. You see, there's not a lot you can really say about Chet because, you know, based on his listening to Merle Travis and that, you know, alternate picking thing, he was a master, a total, utter genius master. And, you know, there's tales of him because he couldn't breathe really well, could he, when he was sleeping? So he had to sleep upright in a chair.
Yeah, that's
right. And every night he'd go to bed, sat upright. Well, he'd go to sleep in a chair, sat upright with his guitar, and he'd play until he went to sleep.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. And he did a lot of production work as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Who was he working for? RCA Victor. And he used to produce for Elvis Presley, of all people. Mm. And Dolly Parton and Waylon Jennings.
Yeah. But I mean, remarkable with that Gretsch guitar, which was, of course, named after him, the Country Gentleman. That was his guitar. And that's where he was known, the Country Gentleman.
Of course.
Know?
And what they say about him as well, that he helped develop the Nashville sound. Hmm. And then I started thinking, well, what is that Nashville sound? And that was just expanding the appeal of country music into a wider adult pop music fan audience.
Yeah.
So it crossed over to adult pop music fans, that Nashville sound. So that kind of explains a little bit more about the Nashville sound, doesn't it, when you think about it?
Well, I was watching a YouTube video with Tommy Emmanuel, the mighty, you know, probably one of the greatest acoustic guitar players on the planet right now. And he was saying that he learned an awful lot of Chet Atkins, and he was the one that really, you know, turned him. And now, old Emmanuel, he's really in that Nashville scene. He's everywhere over the world. But he really has pushed that style forward into something quite, you know, magnificent.
And what I do love as well is that all the stories that we hear of people influencing different people, you know, and I'm interested in now and today and who I'm going to meet and who's going to influence me. Now, who was that chap we saw in Spain that was a little bit similar, who had the acoustic, he did the instrumentals? What was his name?
Oh, goodness me, yeah. It'll come back in a sec.
El
Gringo, no.
No.
He was the Twangero.
That's right.
That's the one.
Now, Twangero reminds me a little bit of that kind of, because he didn't sing really, did he? He just played instrumentals.
But he was dynamite, you know?
Yeah.
Dynamite.
Really smooth as well.
And we met him a couple of times.
Yeah.
Our friend Ankle Vella, he was taught by him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know? And he's, yes, somebody you should check out. But is it El Twangero? I think it is. So look him up on Wikipedia, El Twangero.
The champagne eyes. the one with the champagne.
Farmer John, Neil Young, and Crazy Horse.
You can tell you're in the barn with him, aren't you? Whoa!
Yeah. But that is one thing I love about that record. It's chaos. There's a whoa! And, you know, you hear him in the background. You know, they're obviously doing it all live. And it's that great big crunching guitar sound. I love his guitar sound. I love his playing. I know this is the second Neil Young track we've had on to, you know, the show, but my goodness, we love him so much.
It's great, isn't it? And the way he gets moving, and he almost starts to move like a cow, moving. Yeah. It's just, it's quite comedic, actually. Yeah.
And then his classic feedback at the end, of course, you know.
Oh, I love that. It's like, let's not talk over that. I just want to hear that. I love feedback at the moment. I'm really into it.
Yeah, well, you've been doing it with your bass.
I know. It's great, though, because I hit this note and then I just like, it just takes off and becomes kind of some spaceship language. It's just like, I have no idea what's going on. I can feel it vibrating in my hands and I get really excited. And I'm on this real learning thing at the moment. I just love feedback right now.
It is brilliant, though.
It is.
But he didn't write. I didn't know he didn't write that.
No, which is weird because he. It was written by Don Sugarcane Harris and Dewey Terry, first recorded in 1959, and they were a black duo. And then in 1964, there was a white band called the Premiers that had a massive hit with that song. Mm. And it's just indicative again of that time when you had black artists recording songs and then white artists taking it and making it really popular. It was in that crossover between race music and that history of music at that time.
And that's what I love about Atlantic, you know, Atlantic, because they really championed, didn't they, the black artists, because they'd actually released the black artists.
Yeah.
You know, all, and the other companies down the road were really, really sort of pushing white artists. And it, yeah, so Atlantic were a super cool label.
Yeah, and that's a super cool song.
It certainly is, especially all the wolves. I think we need to start doing that some of our gigs. Whoa!
Yeah, and I grew up in Herefordshire. It's Farmer John, I'm in love with your daughter.
But it's this the one with the champagne eyes. Great line.
Thank you. the skies and the ocean breeze.
Robin Trower, Daydream, from Robin Trower Live. A great live album. I mean, I've always loved live versions of tracks because I think that it's a very honest thing. And of course, for me, with Robin Trower, it takes me back to seeing him in the Free Trade Hall when he had a whole pile of marshals and one of his cabs set on fire. It was a 2x15 JBL
really?
Thing. Yeah, all smoke started coming out. Yeah, all smoke, and it was great confusion. Roadies came on and the fire extinguishers and all that. Yeah, amazing. It played really loud. And Robin Trower, of course, was in Procol Harum. He was one of the guitarists, one of the few guitarists from Procol Harum. And when he went on his own, people said, oh, he's ripped off Jimi Hendrix and all that. And he has got some Hendrix stuff, but his smoothness and his beautiful tone, you know, that neck pickup, the Strat, and he used the Univibe and he used the fuzz. But he had such an exquisite feel. And complimented by that magnificent vocal by James Dewar, who sadly is no longer with us. And James Dewar, you know, bass player, singer, and, you know, just three of them on stage, they created a fantastic racket. And if you look at the live album and see where they were playing, I think it was in Sweden, and it's just an auditorium full with like 20,000 people. And the atmosphere,
crazy.
Of that, yeah, and the atmosphere of that song is so good, you know, and his vibrato. I just love him. I love him. I'm in love with you, Robin.
I'm saying nothing. Mr. Big.
Oh,
Free, Mr. Big, live. Bass, Andy Fraser, who at the age of 15 was playing with John Mayall for 50 quid a week.
Wow.
And there he goes on, age 17, 18, young lad, plays like that. What a solo.
What a solo.
He is like a big elephant euphonium, though, isn't he? Boom, 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 boom. And that short scale.
Yeah, it's a short scale thing. He nicked it off Jack Bruce. I mean, you know, it came right after Jack Bruce. Same guitar, same amp rig, really the same style. But, you know, controversially, I would honestly say that I think he was better than Jack Bruce. But I do. I think, you know, on all the Free stuff, he was remarkable. He had a great sound, great feel, very melodic. Very melodic. One of the most melodic bass players.
And I like, what I like with Andy is the way he moves when he plays as well. He rocks. When I've seen any video footage of him, and he's lied with it. Jack was kind of more doer face. That's what you say, isn't it? I'd say dour, but your accent, northern doer. Accent, doer.
Yeah.
It's like door, but doer. Jack wasn't as accessible, really, visually, I think. I think Andy was a lot more fun, a lot more light.
And, of course, it's very easy to forget the drums. Because Simon Kirk, I mean, what a drummer. When you see him, I mean, there's a great video of him doing that and some other stuff from Granada TV in the 70s earlier on there. And I've never seen anybody strike the hi-hat from such a height. It's like he's beating it to death.
He's gone into like a ritual trance, hasn't he?
Yeah.
The way he plays is some kind of... He's like he's been possessed. He's taken over. He's gone somewhere, hasn't
he? Yeah, and but his tempos are fantastic. It's so difficult to play that slow.
That's so important.
With such power, yeah.
Do you know what? It's so important not to bloody well speed up.
Yeah.
And you just don't appreciate just how wonderful it is when you play with the drummer who keeps it on a level.
But also keeps that groove very difficult. And then, of course, the mighty Paul Kossoff. Great solo again, you know, very sensitive. The stuff he's playing behind that bass solo is so right for it, you know. And then, of course, Paul Rodgers, probably the greatest rock singer ever to come out of the UK. You know, and as a band, the four of them, what an incredible thing. Fire and Water is on our turntable regularly. Free Story, we have it on all the time.
I was going to say, can you tell that we really like that song?
I think that, you know, when you're listening to our show, you can hear what we listen to at home all the time. And that's what this show's all about. We just play the stuff that we love and the stuff that we listen to regularly.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Indeed.
We're here every week with a brand new show.
We are.
1 hour of music, chat and passion.
And that's what we're all about. You can catch us on Twitter at Susie and Simon. That's our
Instagram.
Yeah,
Instagram. Starlight Campbell.
Yeah, we're in Facebook, of course.
We're everywhere.
Absolutely. Mixcloud, you can hear us, Spotify, and, of course, downloadable off iTunes.
And thanks for listening, by the way, and being a part of our musical adventures.
Yeah, see you next week.